My hands are a little dirty.
So am I.
If you're gonna die,
and you knew you were gonna die, and you could choose how, what would you choose?
There's kids in there, and I want to get them out.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Conduit Speaks podcast, episode 4, which is going to be a feature-length film commentary for the French film Inside. That film was made in 2007, and starring Beatrice Dalle as the woman, and Alison Paradis as Sarah, directed by Alexandre Bustillo and Julian Morey, written by Alexander Bustillo. Short film, hour and 15 minutes. That's why it's a good one to pick for this. So I'm going to urge you now to turn down the volume, make sure that your subtitles are on. If you are watching the Dimension Extreme Films disc that I am, the unrated version, should come up automatically for you. But where I'm at right now is I'm paused on the title card screen that says Dimension Extreme Films. And how we normally do this is I'm going to count back 3, 2, 1, play. And when I say play, we're all going to push our play buttons on our DVD remotes. And I think we're just going to get right into this. So the show isn't too long, so let's see how I do with this. I haven't done one in a while, and this is dedicated to my friend Paula. So if you're all ready and have gotten yourself to the Dimension Extreme Films screen, you can pause it there. And 3, 2, 1, play. Then you have the shiny red gears flopping around for La Fabrique de Films and the blood pouring down on them. And then another title sequence for BR Films. And of course we open here with the scene of the baby in utero, my baby finally inside me. No one will take him from me. And you know, obviously CG'd for reasons that don't need to be explained, but really a beautiful image here with the infant floating around in the fluid and then banging around because of this obvious car accident and blood filling the screen. And right away you can kind of find yourself pulled into the crispness and the real, you know, nice cinematography that's found with this film. And there she is. There's our Sarah coming to in the aftermath, bloodied and battered. And she starts off in in a mess and blood pouring out of her mouth and disoriented, and she's going to be put through the ringer throughout the course of the film as well. So pretty powerful way to open a film. And you know, lots of movies open with car crashes, but here you only see the aftermath as she's calling for Matthew. But you don't really need to see the actual accident happen. Because it's just fine the way it is, and plenty gruesome. Of course, checking her belly and get this nice panoramic over the head bird's eye shot of the two cars sitting, and then here come the credits. I think what's always really drawn me to this film is the fact that it certainly is intense throughout and very graphic. Of course, you're going to want to have seen the film first before you listen to a commentary, and I'm pretty confident that you all have. But even quiet moments or more mundane scenes of exposition and narrative, they're essential to the story, but then you're not far away from some real intense visuals, violence, gru, if you will. So it should be definitely be noted that although Dalle and Paradis are the primary characters here, there's quite a few secondary and tertiary characters that kind of weave their way in and out of the story and are pretty essential to what's going on. We know from doing a little background and watching the film that this accident takes place 4 months before Christmas. And obviously we just saw Sarah and Matthew. Matthew's dead, of course, and Sarah and her baby have survived, and we're going to flash ahead here in just a second. Film by fades off the screen. And there it is inside. We're gonna drop in on Sarah 4 months after the accident on Christmas Eve. She's still feeling the effects emotionally and mentally. There you see 4 months later, and she's doing just fine. Doing the sonogram there, and see the scars on her face from the accident. Tomorrow morning at 7, so on Christmas Day, her little baby's gonna be born. And she's obviously, dealing with a number of really traumatic issues here. She doesn't have her husband, her baby's father. Not in a good place, as I imagine most would not be. And certainly, Paradis plays these emotions very well. As she sits by a twinkling Christmas tree, you can only imagine what's going through her mind. Nurse sits down to pay her a visit, and this is certainly, a setup here. Creepy, oddball nurse that she really wishes would just leave her alone. And I think there's some confusion or thought that one of two things: either the nurse, some people think that the woman is the nurse, which of course she's not, as you're sitting here watching. But after you've seen the film as many times as I have, it's obvious. But I think when you're just kind of sitting and watching it for the first time, not really picking apart every single detail, it can kind of fly by you, and then you start questioning things, but this nurse is just an oddball. So has no connection to the woman. And she Sarah calls her a twat. And there she goes. I guess that's all you need to do to end a conversation that you don't want to be a part of. And of course there's Sarah's mommy there to give her a ride home. And Sarah doesn't want to talk about what's going on, and she doesn't want any help or closeness or care for her or her baby. So you saw a quick mention of the riots, and if you've ever seen a French film, Frontiers, the riots that were going on in Paris were more heavily utilized in the plot there, but the riots here certainly play a part in inside as well, especially once the police arrive at the house and they've presumably handcuffed one of the rioters for being a menace to society. And of course, Sarah's really emotionally detached, calling her mother by her first name. So there's a great distance between them, as there is between Sarah and everyone at this point, as she watches, what may or may not be laying ahead for her, the future of her and her unborn child. Of course, here we get some insight and learn that Sarah's a photographer as she sits and takes some photos. Some really nice, quiet, emotional moments leading up to things here. Kind of introduced to these secondary and tertiary characters, and some nice moments as they kind of float in and out of the story here. So this would be Sarah's boss at the paper that she photographs for. And again, you get some mention of the riots, the burning cars, and whatnot. Merry Christmas. So. And he obviously cares about Sarah, and he never really have a clear-cut understanding as to whether there's definitely more than just a working relationship there. Is it a father-daughter, or maybe a little bit more? But he is going to be the man in charge of delivering Sarah to the hospital tomorrow eve or tomorrow morning, and she's gonna go home and spend Christmas Eve all by herself. As is noted here, she doesn't give a shit about Christmas. She'd rather be alone. Just quite a morose character that she's playing, and kind of sets up an interesting dichotomy here, because you see her hopelessness in her real kind of disdain for life and her complete and utter lack of desire to kind of interact with people, but whether you call it maternal instinct or just a human's desire to survive and live at all cost, there's something that kicks in when the shit hits the fan. And of course you have the number on the house if you want to go back and see that. It's a quick little frame. You may have missed it, but I won't spoil it for you because there's can always be some surprises. So mom's on the phone and wants to know if she can do anything for her daughter, like bring her to the hospital and share in the birth of her child, and of course, love that light above the door. She says, no, essentially, fuck off, leave me alone. And here we have the area where she keeps kind of her memories of the life that she thought she was going to have, and a reminder of how different things are now. And of course, Paradise is really a beautiful young woman, and just looking at these pictures, seeing her happy and smiling, cutting back to the scars and the grief on her face, has a very interesting and expressive way about her. Kind of convey everything that she's going through. Scene is really, really nice, a quiet moment that I can't really imagine how incredibly painful feeling your partner's hands and mouth on you and, you know, coddling you and your child, and then of course that can't be because his face blew up on the windshield and he's dead and gone. So back to reality for you. Life sucks, blah blah blah. Passing time again alone, showing off her knitting prowess or crocheting. I don't know the difference, so you'll have to excuse me as she leans back and closes her eyes. Cat's up to no good, but she's out, so. And we're going to be visited by our galloping and snorting pug friend again as Sarah's awoken to some gagging and, you know, oh my goodness, what could be going wrong? And wow, that's a lot of stuff coming out of that mouth. Pretty nasty scene. Mother's milk, maybe? You know. Something's obviously wrong here, but we'll see in not too long that. Just great shots. We'll see in a minute, obviously, that was in her mind, but how gruesome, her laying on her back with that just fountaining up out of her mouth, so. Here we have the first little inkling as she's awoken by a visitor, and we get a nice silhouette there. And good Lord, Christmas Eve. Who could it be? You know, and of course, they want to come in and use the phone. And here come the excuses. Car's broken down, and you know, with the riots going on in the background, of course Sarah doesn't want to be too careful at all, so she's gonna deny her mysterious visitor. And you have the note there of not wanting to be alone with all the violence. And there's the stinger. You know, this person on the other side of the door not only knows your name, but she knows that your husband's dead. And so begins Sarah's night of terror. And yes, indeed, she has threatened to call the police. I love these kind of out of focus, you know, dreamlike, disoriented shots through the people. One of the things I've always enjoyed, and you know, there's always the darkness element to these types of films, and you know, that not being able to see things make things a bit more frightening, but the way that everything else around the darkness is lit, whether it's windows, lamps, you know, you see the kitchen in the background there's this wonderful dull, you know, yellowish, reddish glow about it. And the shadows, there's a great one right there. the figure in the window, I love that. Just very well defined and detailed in the silhouette and shadow. So real nice. Yeah, and of course there you get the first shot of the woman, and I think that's where it's, you know, really implied heavily that it's the nurse, because the lighting of the cigarette and kind of the interaction that they had before. This lady means business. That's a big big knock on the window there. And you get this wonderful moment, like the oh shit moment, where you get this great shot of the spider crack extending there, and Sarah knows that this woman means business now. It's gone from being a creepy, you know, person possibly in distress who needs a phone to someone who knows your name and enough about you to actually causing damage to your property. And she arms herself with her camera, and these are fantastic flash scenes, and I don't know, just so noir in the handling of this imagery, and Sarah's scared shitless. So, unlike the trappings of many traditional horror films of today, we do not get the, you know, phone's not working, no service, blah blah blah. We get the person trapped in their home with use of their phone, and the police actually being called, and and becoming involved. So Sarah goes up to her dark room to develop these pictures, hoping to get a clearer image of the potential intruder. And quite an interesting moment here, because again, there's a good deal of misdirection being played on the part of the filmmakers here. Sarah kind of realizes that this woman's kind of been lurking in the background here, keeping an eye on her and following her for some time. So she's of course relieved to see the flashing of the police lights and heads downstairs to get some FaceTime with the cops, who are clearly dealing with bigger things in the city when it comes to the riots. But I've made the house call and come out in force. So they're gonna come in and take a look around. So she's gonna explain her situation to these young cops. Two come in, and then of course you have one outside just checking the perimeter of the house. And although a short film, and with the sheer volume of violence that's contained within this film, you get these wonderful shots to build things up, these wonderful moments. Lot of atmosphere. She's done her best to give the police the information that she has and can, but with the cop walking around outside with the flashlight and the fog and all that kind of stuff, just get really nice atmospheric shots. So here they are closing the shutters, but they're gonna keep an eye on her and come around. And so there's really, even though you're freaked out, you get the reassurance that the cops obviously responded with everything else going on, and also that that she's bedded down, she's ready to give birth. Here's some more detail about the riots and things that you get to see. Certainly very topical for today, with all the unrest around the world that has continued, and with the Occupy Wall Street movement here, the film coming up on 5 years old. It was picked up by Dimension Extreme in 2008, but again, like I said, it was an 07 film made for $3 million. But even coming up on 5 years old, it's going to resonate, and I can't imagine this ever being a film that I can't return to many, many years from now and still be pulled into it. So there's no thought or concern or worries about her leaving the home, going with someone else. She's had the cops respond, and it's been quiet. So I think she's feeling a little bit better. Tries to contact
her boss Pierre leaves a message for him, and still kind of, you know, hanging onto those pictures, wanting to get a closer look at who could or could not have been trying to come into her home. So, getting herself ready before bed. And this is 28 minutes into the film, and where the proverbial shit is about to hit the fan. As she's lying down for a rest and calming her booby, lights off. Again, that darkness, but lit in such a way, and cinematically handled to a degree that you see exactly what you need to see. I'm a person that's often frustrated by darkness because I feel like I can't make out what's going on, but you truly do see what you need to see in this film, in the darkness. So we get the woman, or la femme, as she's referred to, taking a look around, getting familiar with her surroundings, and getting a little aggravated as well. And I guess since we're assuming everyone's seen this film already, one of the little interesting twists here, if you noticed in the opening of the film with the car accident, the infant is referred to as he, the baby in the belly. And of course, during the ultrasound, we hear Sarah's doctor refer to her baby as a she. So that's another thing that's there that's actually quite obvious with the them trying to misdirect you towards the nurse. It's very obvious and should be, but because of the way many of us watch film, we don't dissect it, you know, ridiculously upon first viewing. So at this point, we all know that that the baby in Sarah's belly is not the baby from the car accident. The woman who was looking around and tearing up clothes and seemingly very frustrated, you know, could it be that she wants and needs this baby to be a he, just like her child was to be before it was killed in that awful accident? Yes, the woman was the other driver. So she doesn't want to see nor deal with baby girl clothes. And now we have her kind of looking at and caressing her child, which she believes is her child, and she has her her bottle of either peroxide or rubbing alcohol, more than likely to sterilize her her instruments. Going to do a fly by the seat of our pants cesarean. Love that, as the scissors drop into the belly button. And I also love that shot. Yeah, those shots of the child, like they do keep going back to that, and it's a real wonderful thing to show the mother and the child in duress and how connected they are, and that the child is a character in this film, and it has to be. It has to be cared about and empathized with. So, bloodied and certainly worse for the wear, Sarah finds herself in the bathroom with the woman going completely apeshit, and we see now that it's on, if you will. And that lamp to the head didn't feel too good. And Sarah gets the lights on, and that's not just a flesh wound. Poor baby. And it's had enough, and it's about time to come out, but timing could not be worse. So, fortunately for Sarah, she's picked a good area to bed down in, because the bathroom now becomes pretty much her setting, her surrounding. And the rest of the house kind of becomes the area for the woman to inhabit. So Sarah's called the cops. They've stopped by, and they're going to be coming by checking on her sporadically. She has called Pierre and given him a little information about what's going on, so he's in the loop. And of course, you can't discount Sarah's mom, who is desperately kind of trying to reach out and stay connected to her. So, got some characters that could throw a bit of a monkey wrench into the woman's plans, and here's Exhibit A. Pierre is here looking for her, checking on her. He comes face to face with the woman who he believes is Sarah's mom. And of course, he received the keys earlier in the day because he will be, or so he thinks, taking Sarah to the hospital in the morning to deliver her child. And she's now, could she possibly be feeling a little bit she's a little bit more confident that maybe this is gonna end. Beatrice Dolly is just a frightening looking woman. It's funny too, like she's so twisted in this film. It's like you have the perfect opportunity to get this man out of your house. He's already said he's leaving, and you invite him to stay for a drink. Why is that? So, I mean, you know why it is. It's because she's insane. and she's trying to kind of acclimate herself into Sarah's world and become part of this life and part of this existence. So, what is it that he sees? Ah, one of the pictures that Sarah took of her intruder. So the bells might be going off. What the hell? Yeah, put your glasses on, buddy. You just unfortunately sealed the deal, so here comes the woman's weapon of choice. And oh no. Who's this? Well, guess what? It's Sarah's mom. And then everybody knows that something isn't right, and this is just absolutely fantastic here. Who are you? That's so brutal. Oops. Great arterial spray there. The violence is just handled so well in this film. Ah, and you can't, I mean, I don't mean to laugh because it's not funny. This is a very tragic film, but when you've seen it so often and you still just marvel at the brutality. Yeah, Pierre, this is not gonna end well for you either. Oh. Sarah's back into hiding, and Pierre. Oh. Yeah, don't worry, you're not gonna need that. Love the shot to the face. It's one thing that always gets me, and it's so rarely done, is that when real violence is gonna happen like that, you're not gonna cut or shoot someone symmetrically or right in the center of their forehead or here or there. She took a swing and she got him right in the side of the face, and it's just fantastically done. Sarah took care of her mom for her, and now Pierre's out of the picture. Love how her dress trails behind her. Now to dispose of the evidence. It's still just brutal to this day to have your mom wandering up the stairs looking for you there to help and just not not really being with it enough to really think about what's going on and just reacting quickly to save yourself and your child and taking out your own mother course, Pierre gurgled and spurted his way back to consciousness, but I don't think that he's waking up from that. If it wasn't clear before, it is quite clear now that the woman will do essentially anything to be at one with that baby. So back upstairs we go. Sarah needs to get back to her home base. And she does, kind of. And there you have another wonderful shot of the baby. And yes, the woman is going to take some damage. It's so great, just that her throwing that needle and just, you know, damn it, another opportunity missed. So, I mean, my God, what a nightmare. You know, everything. 4 months ago, she was pregnant with, you know, a wonderful partner and photographer for a paper, and life was good. And here we are, 120 days later, and maybe things weren't quite so bad. Now they are. I don't know if that ring finger shot was intentional. I mean, it's certainly not gone into. You know, there's a ring on her wedding finger. Is it a wedding band? Did her husband also die in the accident along with her child? She's certainly lost more than Sarah. Either way. Poor kitty. What a disdain the woman has for life after all that's befallen her. However, it's played and relayed to such extreme chaos that it's very difficult to categorize the woman as a sympathetic villain. You know her loss, but there's really no way to really feel anything else but disdain for this woman who's inflicting so much suffering and carnage on every living thing around her, which now includes the cat. So we're, I guess in a sense, both young ladies here are kind of regrouping for the next round of things to come. Holding on to that piece of mirror pretty tight.
What kind of a man would fuck a maniac like you? And notice again, she'd said that she would take good care of him. So it has to be a boy because she was carrying a boy. So, we cut to the exterior. And here are the next people to enter the picture. And of course, two police officers and a perpetrator, quote-unquote criminal, who from the riots has found himself in the back of the police car, of course denying what he's potentially being locked up for. So they're on their way to the police station and going to be making a stop here as ordered to check on this young woman who is in the radar for their nightly rounds. Get yourself cleaned up. You got to put on a believable performance. The perp. Get that nice slow panning in the dark, juxtaposed with the bright chaos of the bathroom. And I guess our weapon of choice to conceal has become the knitting needle. So here we go. There's two of our three. Actually, we have a brand new washing machine. That spin cycle is quite outrageous. So, don't know that the age makes a difference. I love this part right here. I really love this. It's like an example of, I don't know if this was a statement, you know, of the police. Pin the tail on the, or no, pin the scissors on the hand. How'd that feel for both of you? Wonderfully done shot showing the impaled hand, the fingers still moving, just brilliant. Oh, Sarah, you're in a bad way. But I don't know if this is a statement with the riots going on, making a statement regarding the police, you know, aren't just taking this lightly. They're actually thinking and taking it where it needs to go, that extra mile. Yeah, one stupid detail. Yeah, holy fuck, that's right. That's a fucking war zone, buddy. And she's thinking, thank God. Ooh. Think he may just be feeling that in the morning. He's down for the count. But I do kind of wonder sometimes if Bastillon and Maury had a position that was maybe more sympathetic towards the law enforcement during the time of these riots. Oh my fucking God. Headshot. And now, not only is she covered in her own blood, but she's covered in the police officer's brain matter. Gunshot. I don't know if there's some stipulation, which it makes total sense that there is, that you can't leave a suspect alone in a vehicle. So he's come along, as he said, like a mutt on a leash. Now he has his pistol here, and what he's just handed the perp is what you call a riot gun, and it essentially shoots flash grenades, and that's something that the police carry, obviously, but also that they're putting to particularly good use during the riots. So we got two cops down, one cop and one perp alive. Please let me out of this awful place. I mean, it shouldn't be funny, but again, on repeated viewings, it's just comical, so. And the poor cop, he's got the perp hooked to him. He's got this poor woman who's, you know, a bloody mess in the bathroom. Two cops dead. Another older gentleman dead. An older woman dead. You know. So, here we go. Love that riot gun. And there go the lights. Now, here we go with him giving Sarah a gun to protect herself. Good call. Lights are off, and now we're going to go look for the circuit breaker to get the lights back on. And of course, we have the cops under the circumstances, or I should say at this point, cop, I would say handling this situation that you would never imagine ever finding yourself in about as well as you could. So we're gonna go get the breaker back on. That's an important piece to the story here, because what you're gonna find is that the mission here is to get the breaker back on. So that is what the focus of these two men shall be. So now we have cop in short sleeve, brown shirt with yellow stripes and perp in the dark. I mean, she's just an absolute disaster. So, at first, they truly believed that that she was gone, and there may be a little piece of them that might even still believe that, even though the power went out. So we've got the cop, the brown short sleeve shirt, working on the breaker, the perp holding the flashlight for him. Sarah upstairs, lying back down. All right, once I get the lights on, I'll let you go. Once you're outside, find every cop you can. Uh-oh. I think it was intentional to get the cop out of that sweatshirt so that we know that he's the one with the short sleeves, because it obviously is very chaotic, and it's gonna get even more so. Hey, lady, she's still here. Cop is down. So we have the perp searching for the keys to get himself loose. Ouch. And the scissors make their triumphant return. So amazing the trauma that the human brain can take. I suppose it all depends on what part of the brain the damage is done in. He's most clearly not altogether or in his right mind. You ever hear the story about the guy who worked on the railroad that took the railroad tie through his head into his brain? When it was removed, he was essentially a completely different person, but he survived. It's so strange, the human body. There you get that wonderful face-to-face shot that's become synonymous with the film. Ouch. So, Sarah is gained the upper hand here, as much of an upper hand as she can have, and she's gonna make a break for it. I believe she's already pretty confident in her skill with a knitting needle, so the battle ensues. Just brutal. At this point in the film, I think no matter how many times you watch it, it's painful, it's traumatic. And you're hoping for that, badass, kick-ass moment where the hero rises and the protagonist survives. Oh God, she's taking a beating, and toaster on a string doesn't make the situation much better. Woman's quite pleased with herself. You really begin to start wondering if poor Sarah's gonna make it. Maybe she will. Insert smoking was hazardous for your health joke there. Kind of debatable as to how she knew to do that. Things couldn't get much worse, so it's a wonderful groom there. So I mean, she's beyond fucked. So what is a hole in the neck gonna do if you really want to stay alive and give your unborn child a chance? You might as well go all the way, huh? And yes, there are a million and one uses for duct tape. I love how the filmmakers didn't shy away from that scene with the aerosol can. You know, I'm sure logistically it caused some problems, and I think that, you know, it was probably talked about and discussed several different ways to do it, but it just, it turned out wonderfully, and especially the profile of the woman's head and face being burned was handled extremely well. That's kind of, I guess, our hero shot, where, you know, we're led to believe that she's going to do her damage and exact her revenge. Now, getting some shots of the bodies on the floor, and this is kind of a moment that's been pondered over and criticized, and you're getting to see the bodies there one by one. And you know, one of my dear friends, Jason, always has an issue with the way the general audience may or may not view a certain scene in this film, and there's the woman, she's fucked. You can kill me again, Sarah. And then we have the flash back, and you get the same dialogue that you had at the beginning. No one will take him from me. No one can hurt him now. And then, bang. So now we get to see her side of the situation. Sarah comes to realize that this woman lost her baby. And hey, the lights are back on. So, as you see, the short sleeve wearing police officer with the perp attached to him is still alive. He is not a zombie, as many people think. He is still has in his mind the putting the breaker back on,
He's disoriented and has been blinded by the riot gun. So he thought that Sarah was the woman. The woman comes to Sarah's rescue because obviously she does not want Sarah and the baby to both die. She wants to get the baby out alive. So the disoriented cop, who had taken his sweatshirt off to reveal the short sleeve brown shirt with yellow stripes, see, his eyes were burnt out pretty severely, so can't see very well. Attacked Sarah, thinking that she was the intruder, and now he's been finished off. So, Sarah climbing slowly up the stairs on her back, and I hope everyone is watching the unrated version at this point. You should know that, but there is an R-rated version out there, unfortunately, that's been cut to hell. And perhaps one of the most disturbing, disheartening, and saddening scenes to ever be put to film, as the woman comforts Sarah as her baby comes. And unfortunately, it may very well be stuck. But it's the woman's job to unstick it. So, much as she had planned to originally do, she's going to and this scene is just so it's not drawn out because it's critical, but it's done and played so methodically. That is just extremely painful and stressful. And again, you have that whole single shot. There's no cuts there from the time you pan down from Sarah's face to the belly. That prosthetic was all there, filled with blood, ready to use. You have the cut there up to her face and cuts now, but that was a nice single shot to start the forced cesarean. Screaming mommy. Fade to black. Now we get to survey the landscape. I know that when it comes to French films, High Tension is known for the great gore and intensity. Martyrs is always thought to be the most disturbing and violent of the French New Wave of horror. There is certainly a lot of emotional wear and tear on that film, and some pretty traumatic beatings that go on, and certainly some gore and gru. But for my money, Inside, nihilistic ending and all, as the woman settles in with her baby. We'll get to see the aftermath here. Inside is the quintessential horror film because of the emotional weight that it carries with its subject matter and the sheer level of disgust and skill with which the gore is handled. Sarah is dead, her baby is out, the woman is clearly fucked, and her face is damaged, but she has her baby. It's Rock-a-Bye Baby. And just a nice long hold shot on the scene there. So everybody can kind of soak in and absorb everything that they just experienced. And that was the feature-length commentary for Inside. I hope everyone enjoyed it. I'm glad I finally got to do it. My favorite horror film of all time. And hopefully we were able to keep everything synced up and everything worked out good with it on your end. So roll credits. Let's see, episode 5 will be coming up, and we may have an interview coming up. It has been confirmed, but I never like to go too far into it until I'm absolutely positive. So, looking at a really good interview coming up next week. Hopefully that will all pan out. If not, some reviews and more movie talk. So, thank you for sitting through Inside with me. An incredible experience, no matter how many times I watch it. And we will talk again next week. So take care, everyone, and we will speak soon.